Hey everybody, I'm Tim. How are you? And I'm an addict and alcoholic. I don't know if I need this thing or not. Yeah? Okay. So, all right. I guess we'll start in the beginning real short. I had a normal childhood. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Bill and my buddy Anthony, my beautiful girlfriend Val, and my best female friend Tara in the back. Thank you, guys. So I had a normal childhood. I'm from Rochester, New York. It's, it's a long way from here, but everything was great. You know, I had all the toys I could want, you know, when I was a kid. I had all the bikes I could want, you know, when I grew up with that. There was no drinking or drugging going on at, like, an early age for me. It was like frowned upon for me to drink in front of my mom or, you know, my stepdad at like an early age. I just didn't do it. I wasn't able to smoke weed until I was 16 because of my two older brothers. They said not until you turned 16 and then you could smoke weed. So I guess that was like a magic number. So I remember when I turned 16 on the day of, my stepbrother gave me a bag of weed. You know, that was very nice of him. And so I smoked it all. You know, it was just a quarter, and then I went out, and then I bought the Newports, because I heard that that was supposed to enhance the high, and then I bought the 40, you know, and I had all that stuff, and so I had the cigarettes, I had the 40, and then I had the bag of weed, and then I had a friend of mine, and so he rolled up the whole bag, and I smoked it, and I didn't even get high, and I was like, well, what the heck? I was like, this sucks, and so I went back the next day, I told my brother, and then he laughed, and he's like, oh, yeah, that was just all, like, stems and seeds and stuff. I didn't know anything about weed, and I was like, and then he gave me the real weed, and then as soon as I did that, it was out of a bong or whatever, and I passed out the very first time for, like, 2-3 hours, and then I woke up, and I was like, wow, that was awesome, you know, and so I kept smoking. You know, I smoked from when I was 16 until 38-ish, you know, like around there. You know, like, and like I said, I didn't drink or do any hard drugs, you know, when I was growing up. I had a normal childhood all throughout the thing. I played with toys. I had the BMX bike. I had the car at 16, you know, had the job, you know, and so I did that. And somewhere, I think I was 25. I'm not going to talk a lot about my past because it just wasn't bad, you know, and I don't want to sit up here and say how awesome my childhood was and everything when some of your stories is not like that, you know. So at the age of 25, I had did my first hard drug. You know, my sister-in-law, it was my wife at the time, it was her sister, so she handed me a lighter, a straw, and then a piece of tin foil, and then she told me to smoke or to suck on the smoke or something. So I did that. I don't even know what it was. I got high, and then somewhere after that, I don't even remember the first time I did crack. I really don't, but somewhere from the tin foil, straw, and lighter, it went to crack. I don't know where, when, or how. It just did. And when that happened, that was, you know, I don't want to say it was manageable, you know, because from, like, the first time I did it, I always wanted more. But I wasn't out there yet for, like, 3 days at a time and everything. And but it got bad really quick. I can remember my son would be outside playing at the playground, and I would be in the apartment in the bathroom smoking while he's outside. I was in and out of jail a lot. I wrote, like, when I got a bank account, they give you, like, this book full of checks. And I didn't know anything a lot about, you know, the banking system. So I wrote all the checks in the box. You know, not just the one book, but the box. I wrote the entire box. And so I spent a lot of years, like a lot of going in and out of jail, because they would have to process each warrant as it came in. So just because I was in there one time for 3 months and then got out and they said I'm fine, It just was because that they hadn't processed the other warrants yet for all the other checks. So I spent several years going in and out of jail. And that sucked. I was in there just for the longest time. I think it was like 3 months, and it was like a county jail. But it was Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's is what I spent in jail, all three holidays. And that sucked. So when the lady came and said that, I can give you 5 years on paper and you can leave at the end of the day. And I was like, absolutely. I did 5 years on paper successfully. I had community service. I had fines and everything. And I paid all the fines. I did all the community service. I only got in trouble once for smoking weed on paper. So I did like a work release on that. I was in there for like 2 weekends, and then that was it. But I did the 5 years on paper. So if you're on paper and you say you can't do it, it's a lie. I mean, you can. I did 5 years on paper. So it is possible. When I started doing the drugs, I just hate like war storing and stuff. It does, to me it's pointless. But with the crack is like I would be gone for 3 days and then I would come back. That was my story. I would go and I would spend like $900, which or whatever my check was at that month, and then be gone for 3 days. It didn't matter if I had a son or a wife at the time. My mom on her hands and knees, like really on her hands and knees, like screaming and crying, telling me to stop. I just couldn't. And to be honest, I don't even know if I wanted to. I enjoyed that drug so much, it didn't matter. It got so bad that my son tried to commit suicide. He jumped off the 635 bridge in Dallas and shattered every bone in his leg from his knee down to his foot. He doesn't have any cartilage or bone there at all. It's all pins and rods. To this day, he can't, like, stand for a long time or whatever. That didn't stop me. I didn't care about that. I just wanted my drugs. So I kept using them. There was a time in Rochester where it got pretty bad enough to where I was in my aunt's house or her apartment, and she had allowed me to stay there. And I started using there. She's got a cookie. And it got so bad that she kicked me out. And I come from a family where they don't throw you out. They just don't. They just love you. So I didn't know anything, like where to go or whatever. And for whatever reason, I called my brother's brother-in-law's sister. And I had told her the story of what was going on. And then she's like, well, my brother is actually owns some sober living. Why don't you swing down? So I was like, okay, cool. So I did the sober living thing. I got down here to Austin, and he put me up in one of his houses. I think I lasted like 4 days, and then I sold a PlayStation 2 or 1. I don't know, whatever year it was back then. The first week I was there. And then I got like a soda can and then like a little dime. And then I smoked that. Somehow he found out, and then he brought me here. And this was my first stint in rehab. All this stuff was not here. I didn't have any of that. But I came here. I did the 30. I experienced the people that I got to witness, the people that would have like 25 days, and then they think they're good, and then they leave. So I saw that. I saw the people with like 29 days and think they're good and then leave and don't get that, that one last day in. So I did the full 30. So I got out. Oh, and while I was here, we would go on a bus to Club 101. And then I met a girl that was on the female side there. So while I'm there, I'm staring at her. She's staring at me, So it's like awesome. So I got out, and then she got out, and then I went to Club 101, and then I saw her there, and then we hooked up, and I think we lasted like 2 weeks, and then I was doing cocaine, and then I was also drinking pretty heavily at that time. So I got thrown out of that sober house. And then he put me up in another one because it was my brother's brother-in-law, which I've also known since my son was born. So I did this for like 10 years, guys. 10 years. I smoked from 25, probably 8 years out there before I even knew anything about rehab. I came in here, and then I did another 10 years going in and out of this place, in and out of the rooms. Just back and forth. I'd get a year and stuff. I met Bill at that time. That would be the time I'd have a year, and then I'd show up to the rooms. I'd spit a little fire, and then like next month I'd be getting a newcomer chip, and then I'd be going back out. And I did that, and then I'd go to New York, and then my dad died, and then I got, an inheritance for $165,000. So I was like, well, this is my break. So I took that money. I went to New York. I ended up back here. I didn't have $165,000 when I came back. I can tell you that. Had about $5,000. And then I blew that because I'm so concerned of what people think of me that I grew up with. I throw, like, it's funny, but it's like I throw money at it. Like, I throw money at, like, so someone will love me. I throw money at, my family members. I throw money at my friends just so they like me and stuff. So that money didn't last, and then I still use down here. And then months went on, and then, my grandparents died, and then I got another $150,000. So I took that, and I was like, well, this is my second chance. This is my chance to do it right this time. I'm not going to screw up. I'm not going to smoke crack. That's bad. I'm just going to go back to New York. I'm going to drink. And I'm not going to do drugs. I'm just going to go hang out in the bars like normal people, and just sit there and bullshit with the bartender, flirt with the chicks, and everything is going to be great. And then I'm going to landscape in the summer, snowplow in the winter. It'll be perfect. I'll be out there chopping wood, smoking weed. I got all these great things that I just love doing, right? And I'm like hammered halfway down to New York, driving there, So then I get there with the $155,000. I end up back here. I didn't have $155,000. So I blew about $250,000 on inheritances. I came back down here. I went through two marriages, on this drug. One marriage was with a girl that I had known since I was 14 years old. And when we were probably 15 or 16, we said that we were going to marry each other, and we finally did up in New York when I was 38. And then so I finally married this broad who I've known since I was 14 years old, and then I screwed that up. And I didn't even screw that one up on drugs. I wasn't even doing drugs at that time. I was a dry drunk. I was just having a couple sips here and there, but I was so agitated and I was so angry inside that whatever she said, I would just like blow up on her. So I was like, so we got into a fight, and I was like, well, I'm leaving. I'm going to sell my truck. I had two vehicles at the time. I was like, I'm going to sell the truck to your dad for $1,500. I'm going to take the 4Runner. I'll go back to Austin. I'll work the program, and I'll get a good base so I can come back to Florida and then fix this. And then she's like, okay, well, that sounds good. You have to work the program. So I came back down here. I worked the program. I got to step 9, which was the amends. I didn't talk to my sponsor. I didn't pray or nothing. I immediately called her and said, I'm so sorry about everything, and I was wrong, and you were right, and I want to come home. And she's like, fuck you. I want a divorce. And I was like, that's not supposed to go that way. The amends is you're supposed to say, it's okay. I just want you to do better, not that I want a divorce. So then we got a divorce. And then I stayed in the rooms. That was probably another time that Bill met me. I'm in the rooms, and I'm like, yeah, I've been through a divorce, and I'm still sober, and then you can do it too, and I didn't relapse yet, and I'm so strong and everything, and don't be weak, And then, like, 3 months later, I'm smoking and drinking. It was a vicious cycle, man, for 10 years in this room. you know, again and out of the rooms. Just, I couldn't understand the point to where that if you told me that if I was going to drink a beer, light beer, regular beer, whiskey, whatever, just a beer, that I was going to smoke crack. I said, God didn't make me that way. God's not going to make a human being that way. I said, there's no way. I said, it is impossible. I said, that's not right. I said, he can't make a human like that. And so I rode that for years. And that's what hung me up so long. And I mean, that, and I don't think I was done, you know, is really what it boils down to. Is I can say anything I want up here, but what it really boils down to is that I wasn't ready. I didn't have sufficient force yet. You know, I had a lot of bottoms, you know, like I'd sell the TV, sell my phone. That was my deal, is I would sell my TV, sell my phone, and I would do a title loan on my truck every single time I went out, every time. And then I would always get bailed out by my mom, you know, every single time. She would pay the rent. She would pay the title loan back. I knew exactly what to say to manipulate her into wanting to do that. And I probably did that about four times on my 4Runner. It was just, God, it sucked, man. You know, I don't even know if there was any, like, really fun times, you know, really, like awesome times at the bar, you know, because I was still kind of like, even if I was there and I wasn't doing drugs, I still really wanted to do drugs, you know. So I wasn't being present at the bar when that's all I wanted anyways, you know. It didn't matter. I just heard something from my girlfriend today. It's like, I'm never happy, right? Like, I got out of rehab, I was 132 pounds. I was like, man, I was like, if I could just be like 150, I'll be happy. So I got up to 150. And I was like, man, I was like, if I could be 155, you know, I was like, that's perfect. So I got to 155. So then I stepped on the scale. I was like, all right, man, 160. You know, if I can get to 160, I'm going to be happy. So I got to 160. No lie, this is what's going on. So I got to 160, still not happy. I was like, man, all right, 165. That's it, man. If I can get to 165, I'll be good. I'll look good. All the broads will want to talk to me. I'll be fine inside, right? So I get to 165, and I'm like, man, 170 would be a beast, man. If I can get to 170... that would be awesome. So I got to 175. You know what happens next? I was like, man, I got to 170. So then, yeah, so of course I look, and I'm like, all right, well, 175, that's it. So I got to 177. You know, and no, I didn't look back down and said, I want to get to 180. I was like, okay, 177, okay, that's too much. You know? You know, and it's like, no matter what goes on, man, and it's like, I talked to my girlfriend today, it's like, no matter what I get, you know, like, I get an apartment for the first time with my girlfriend, and it's like, now I want a house. You know, I get a car, now I want a better car. You know, I have a job, and I get a salary, now I want a bigger set. It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, my boss can give me $65,000 right now. What do you think I'm going to say in the morning? Man, I wish I had 70. You know what I'm saying? If I had 70, I'd be perfect. And it just never, there's a sickness inside of me that I don't know how to fix. You know what I mean? And all I have is this program to maintain it. So this last time when I hit my bottom, it was the same bottom as ever. You know, I had the cell phone gone, the TV, I had the title loan, spent all the money. And then my son was rubbing my head. He was like 20 something at the time, saying, oh, daddy, it's going to be okay. I'll take care of you. You know, I got this. We'll figure it out. You know, like, if you don't want to go to rehab, you don't have to. We can do this, me and you. And I was like, man, I'm like, if I don't leave right this second, I was like, I'm going to use. I was like, I can already see myself spending my next check from Time Warner already at that time. And then at that moment, you know, at that moment, and I never felt that before. I never felt when I was coming down that at that exact same second that I wanted to spend my next check or that was going to happen. But this time it was there. I was already planning what I was going to do with that money at the same time as when I'm crying and my son is trying to rub my head and saying that's going to be okay. I'm already planning how to smoke more crack. And I said, if I don't leave now, I was like, I'm going to be an addict. And so I called Abe. He came and got me. He brought me to another place, not this place. And I got like 3.5 years now. It'll be 4 years in November. So whatever that is. And when I got to rehab, you know, I've been in sober living for like 10 years and stuff. I've seen how people act in rehab and stuff. So I knew the game, you know. I wasn't going to hang out. I made a point to when I went to rehab that I wasn't hanging out with anybody there all that much. I wanted to hang out with the counselors. I wanted to see what they had to offer. I wanted to get fixed. I didn't want to hang out. I was sick and tired of hanging out with the freaking knuckleheads, all right? I didn't want to do that. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to just sit there, play volleyball, smoke 16,000 freaking cigarettes until my lungs explode. You know, I can talk shit about the counselors behind their backs, talk about that guy over there. You know, I didn't want to do that because I knew that was going to go on because it's just what happens, you know? And so I stuck with the counselors, you know? And I remember it was on day 30. I still had my insurance from Time Warner. By law, they couldn't cut you off until after 30 days. And so it was actually day 31, and they brought me into the office, and they said that your insurance, you know, is done. And I said, if I leave right now, I was like, I'm going to smoke. I was like, I have to stay here. I said, I'm almost done with the steps. I said, if you float me on your dime, I said, I will finish these steps in a timely manner. I said, I promise you that. And so I stayed another 12 days. I think I stayed like a total of like 42 days. And each day I was in there, it was like what I tell people is that it was like those spiral light bulbs, you know, when you flip the switch and they're kind of bright, but then they work their way into being really bright. That was every single day I woke up. It was just getting better and better, and I understood more and more of what they were talking about the circle of addiction and then how, you know, like the first step worked and just everything. It was really based on 1 through 4 in there, and they stressed really hard on step 1 because I never knew that – I never thought that I really had a problem. And when they broke down step 1, it was just – it was like eye-opening for me. And I'll tell you this, and I don't tell like a lot of people this. When I was doing my third step, I had to do the third step prayer. So I had to pick 2 people to do the third step prayer with. One was a mentor. That was the guy that was bringing me through the work, and then I had to pick somebody else. So I picked this dude named Parker, and I saw that he was doing the deal in there like I was doing the deal. And so I picked him, and then so it was at night, and then so I was over there, and that was when I still smoked. So I smoked like 14 cigarettes, and they're over at the table waiting on me, and then I shit you not, I was walking towards the table, and I mean my hand to God, I was walking towards the table, and I had a vision of like Jesus surrounded by fire, right? You know, like a portrait of him. And then I was walking towards him, and I felt all this stuff leave out of my body, like all these sins and nasty, dirty shit I was doing, and just all these evil, awful stuff just like leaving my body. And when I got to the table, you know, I prayed, and then I cried. You know, and then I hugged Parker, and then I cried when I hugged him, and then I hugged the other guy, and then I cried when I did that, and then I walked back, and then I cried when I was walking back, and then the guys were coming out, so then I stopped crying, and I was like, I'm good, you know, but it was like, after that, man, it was like, and I bucked a little bit in there, like, we had this one thing where we had to, this one group where we had to, like, close our eyes and meditate for, you know, like a minute or two, and then we had to draw what we see on, you know, like a piece of paper. So, you know, so this poor lady, you know, like I'm probably like 14 days sober, you know, I got horrible temper. And then so she comes over and she's like, okay, so what crayon do you want? And I was like, excuse me? She's like, you have to draw a picture of what you saw. And I said, yeah, but you're going to hand me a crayon. She's like, yeah, and I said, yes, I'm like 40 years old. I said, you're not handing me a crayon. And then she's like, yeah, you have to sit here and do this. And I was like, this is stupid. I said, I'm not doing it. So I did it. And then she handed me the crayon, or no, she asked me the color. So I was like, just give me like a black and gray. And then I scribbled, you know what I'm saying, nothing on there. And I was like, here. I was like, this is stupid. You know, and everyone's drawing these, like, awesome pictures of, like, Jesus under a bridge and, you know, like, just like these elaborate things. And I'm like, you didn't see that. I'm like, you didn't see that in 60 seconds. I'm like, there's just no way, you know. And so, like, the whole time I was in there, you know, I didn't participate in that. You know, I can't lie and say at the end I drew this awesome picture. It was always the black and gray crayon, and I didn't do anything on it. But on the meditations and everything, it was like, it was an eye-opener for me, man. And when I got out, you know, and this is where I'll start my recovery deal, because I don't like to talk about my addiction that much, man, because I'm still new. You know, I only got like 3.5 years, man. If I'm to stand up here and say that I don't want to drink, that'd be a lie. You know, I'm an alcoholic. You know what I'm saying? And it's not easy. This is the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And I went to boot camp in Paris Island. Now, I didn't finish that, but I went there. You know, and this is, I was there for a while. But it didn't, I was just like, this ain't for me. Even back then, I'm standing in formation. You know, I'm standing there and da-da-da-da-da. And then I'm like, man, I really want to drink and smoke weed. And then so I came up with a lie to leave Paris Island, right? A government-owned facility. I'm manipulating people in there of what to say to where I'm able to leave out of there to where that they have to say, yes, he has to leave. You know what I mean? And it's just like, there's like a lot of sick things up here. And so I even did that, but so when I got out, you know, I didn't have anything, right? I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anything, right? And I've seen in and out of the sober houses so much. I've heard it, and I mean, I've even said it, like, well, you know, like, I got to have my cell phone, you know, like in the beginning, or I can't work, you know, or else I have to go work and I have to make like $800 a month or it's not going to work and blah, 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 and all this and stuff. I got out of rehab. I didn't have a damn thing. I didn't have no phone, no job, nothing. I had to get a hold of my brother-in-law just to call my mother. You know what I'm saying? Just to call her. And I did that for 2.5 weeks. You know what I'm saying? Without a cell phone. And then I finally got a cell phone. And then it was a shitty cell phone. You know? But I still wanted the best at that time. I wanted like the iPhone 5 or whatever. And I don't even know what I got. I think it was like a Nokia. And then I got that. And then I got a job. Right. But in the meantime, I was hitting meetings. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing in the sober house. And then I got a job. And then my first job out of rehab was a Best Buy for like $9 an hour. I worked that up until my stepfather passed. And that was like within my first year. And inside my first year, my stepfather passed away on a Tuesday. I found out at 5:30 in the morning, or 5:30 in the evening. By 7:30 that night, I was at 101 telling my story, just after hearing that my stepfather died inside my first year. And then I went to go do the funeral and all that, right? I didn't use that as an excuse. I had a perfect excuse at that time to go drink. In my mind, I did, and I didn't. I went through a breakup inside my first year with a girl that I thought I was madly in love with. And I was crying and praying. I literally prayed for 3 months straight every single night. He was there. Every single night I prayed to God for just some sort of closure so I can get this broad out of my head and I can go forward. I was a wreck every single night. And then finally, 3 months later, I got the closure I needed, and then I moved forward, and I didn't drink after that. It's like something inside of me, like I know you hear it all the time, man, but I mean, I'm not lying. When my time was up to use drugs and to drink, you know, I just knew inside here. You know, it wasn't anything that anybody said. It wasn't some fabulous speaker I heard. And then it was, you know, like the act of God through his words that got me. No, all that crap, it didn't work. It was, I had to totally be out of options. There is nothing left in my brain that can make me think that I will not smoke drugs if I drink. There's nothing left in my brain. And I could not say that from the age of 25 until the age of 41. I couldn't say that. And I'm standing here now. There's nothing that you can throw at me that's going to convince me that that's going to be different. If I go back out now, it's because I choose to. Not because, you know, I think I have, you know, one more left in me or something. It's just because I quit the program. And I'm not going to kid you. This is the hardest thing, You know, like I said it before, this is the hardest thing that I've ever done, was stay sober. It's not easy. You know what I'm saying? It's not easy for me to come up with to think that I'm never going to drink again ever in my life. That was a hard pill for me to swallow, still swallow nowadays. It's still hard that I'm never going to drink again. You know what I mean? But the life that I have now and the things that I see that I have acquired, you know, just like I still have a temper, right? Like I still get mad at my girlfriend. I still get mad at my boss. You know, I'm still nasty and angry with her at Walmart. You know, we had this nasty incident, huge incident. I was such an ass, total ass. And I was ugly, really, really ugly. And it took me 45 minutes only to apologize to her and to tell her that I was wrong and that she was right. 45 minutes. That would have took me years, you know what I'm saying, you know, like a while back. I probably would have left her, you know what I'm saying? But 45 minutes later after that argument, I'm already, you know, like apologizing to her, man. It's like I got into the work, man, and I mean something changed. I'm not going to sit up here and say that I'm walking with Jesus and that there's this light on me. I'm just as normal as you guys, man. I have a temper still. I still say the F word a lot. You know, I still get aggravated with my boss, you know, and stuff, but I stick with it. I do things in this program that I don't want to do. When I don't want to do something is when I do it. You know what I'm saying? When I don't want to drive down here, when someone calls me and says, hey, do you want to speak? For the first 20 seconds is like, man, that's like 40 minutes, dude, on a Sunday, you know? And it's almost like football season. I was like, but it's a quick thought. You know, it's a quick thought now. And then I'm like, yeah, man, cool. You know, but like the life I have now, man, is I got six, yeah, because I'm number seven. I got six friends right now that are all my best friends, and one's my boss. One, this guy didn't like me. He didn't trust me. Nothing. And now I work for him full time. I got a salary, paid benefits. I get to take off whenever I want, and it's great. And I just got back from a retreat in Horseshoe Bay that I've never experienced in 45 years of my life. I've never experienced that. And I got to experience that because he trusts me and because he believes in me. I just came back from New York. I just came back there for a week. I went down there for a reunion. I'm about to leave for Florida in October for 2 months for 2 weeks, because I'm about to spend time with her mom, you know, and it's like, I do this deal, man. I got this meeting on Monday that we try our best to show up to, and it's just us guys, and I'll give you like a little bit about it, is that we all take turns, and we'll say how many meetings we went to, how many prayers and meditations we did, how many sponsees we have, what we're struggling with, what step we're on, if we're on a step, and is that it? And then how many nightlies? And we do that every Monday. And if you fall short, and we say what we're struggling with. So, you know, that's a place to go to where if you're struggling with something, you know, like private that you don't want to share, like in a meeting, like I don't have, like I can't lie, right? So I'm about to say something because it's the only thing that works for me is the honesty, right? So I'm in this program, right? And then clean and sober before I met you, you know, I'm spending money on porn, you know what I mean? On the phone, you know, just like mad amounts of money and everything, and it's bothering me, you know what I mean? So I go to my group and then I mention that in the group, you know, and this is before you were there, but you were there, and they helped me through that. You know what I'm saying? And they helped me through that. That's the trust, and that's the honesty and stuff, and that's the power that we have in this group, right? That's how I'm able to stand up here, 45-year-old man, you know, from up north, being able to say that, you know, like in front of you. That's not me. That's not me at all, you know, but I still have, you know, like I still have my demons, I still have my problems and everything like that, man, but I worked this program to the best of my ability, right? I don't tell anybody how to work their program, man. That's for you to figure out, man. I don't know what you need to keep sober, man. I'm still learning myself. Like, I sponsor people, right? Like, I raise my hand, I do the deal, right? And then when someone asks if I can bring them through the work, I say yes. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you have to work your own program, man. You have to find out what works for you, man. And I'm just up here to tell you that this guy right here, man, I had nothing, absolutely nothing when I got out of rehab. I got a new truck. I got a girlfriend. I got a salary job. I got an apartment. I got two dogs. You know, I'm able to take a vacation whenever I want. I have money in my pocket. You know what I'm saying? I have everything. I have more stuff right now than I even know what to do with, right? And that's just because I keep doing the next right thing, man. I keep doing stuff when I don't want to do it. That's what works for me, is that when I don't want to do something, you know, but then I go ahead and then I do it anyways. Now, I'm not perfect, right? There are times where I'll miss a meeting, right? And then I'll say I was spending time with Vale. I probably spent maybe 15 minutes with her, and then she went off to her meeting, but then I chose to stay home, right? But then I'm still going to tell everybody, I'm still going to tell my guys, oh, I was spending time with my girlfriend. But that's a lie. I was home. You know what I'm saying? I didn't feel like going. You know, I was lazy, right? But then who am I to blame then when I'm restless, irritable, you know, like, in discontent, and then when I go to work the next day and then I'm a dick to my boss, right? Well, I wonder why. I'm still lying. You know what I'm saying? I'm not perfect, man. I struggle at this thing every day. Every day I struggle at this program, man, but I know it's better than where I was. You know what I'm saying? Everything I have to do in here is still better than the way it is out there. It's not easy for me to always tell the truth. It's not easy for me to always keep my mouth shut when I want to punch somebody in the mouth. It's not easy. It's not. You know what I'm saying? And it's hard, right? But it's just, man, I cannot stress enough, man, that if you just hold on, right, and you do what you got to do, man, get through the steps, honestly. You know what I'm saying? Pay attention to the counselors. You know, start talking to Chris and all these other guys, man. Leave the knuckleheads alone. You know what I mean? And if, you know, I got a guy that I know, a guy, man, he came down from Jersey. He had a garbage bag. A garbage bag, right? That's it. He has a lot more than a garbage bag right now. I'll tell you what, he has his own business. He has two company trucks. He has his own house. He has a girlfriend. He's got plenty of money. He's got like five times the amount of money as I. He had a garbage bag. You know what I'm saying? Like, the program works, man. Like, it works. I'm not saying it works so you can have stuff. I mean, we all want stuff. I didn't get sober just so I could be sober. You know what I'm saying? I did get sober so I can get my life back. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. And I'm not out here, when I'm not here, I'm not out there 24/7 with a big book in my hand and then a, you know, like a pad of paper and always doing a four step and then a spot check inventory and like, oh man, I said the F word. I better call my sponsor and I better write this out on 16 pages. And no, you know what I mean? I got a normal life, man. I talk about normal stuff with my girlfriend. I talk about normal stuff with my mom. And the relationship I have with my mother right now, that's priceless. That right there is priceless. That's what makes this whole thing worth wanting me to keep going forward, is that the relationship I have now with my mother is just amazing, man. She calls me every single day now, right? And there's times I see the phone and I'm just like, man, I really don't want to answer this. You know what I'm saying? Because I know, hey, Timmy, I love you and you know, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, it's like, I get it. You know, but it's like, God, man, it's like, what a blessing. You know what I mean? It's like, what a blessing, man. And it's like, what a blessing that, you know, I got a friend that was working overtime, right? Stop working overtime just to come see me, right? That's awesome, man. That's this program, man. That's like, it's such a reward, man, that I don't, and it's not just for me, man. There's stories of all these people here who are probably in this row that aren't over there that have the same story as me. Is that now they have their life back. You know what I'm saying? But we had to struggle. We all had to sit in that chair. I mean, I sat in that chair twice. You know what I mean? Like, we all had to do that. You know what I mean? But it's like, what I do now that's different, and I'll tell you this, and this is the truth, is that I do what other people tell me to do. Because everything that I want to do is not right. And that to me is progress. Whatever somebody tells me that they think I should do, right? Like, I'll go to Bill and I'll tell him something, but then when he comes back with his advice, it always makes more sense than mine. You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, man. And it's never the thing that I want to do, ever. I never am like, God, man, that's great advice. I was hoping you were going to say that because that's exactly what I wanted to do. It's like, no, that's not what I wanted to hear. It's not what I want to do, but I know if I do this, I know that it's a pretty much of a guarantee that for the rest of that day, I'm safe and I'm secure, right? Because I don't try to plan out more than like 48 or 72 hours ahead, man. Like, I can't do that, man. I got to work just this day. Like, what do I got to do when I wake up in order for me to stay sober that day? That's what I focus on. Right. And that's what I've been focusing on. And that has allowed me to have 3.5 years. And that's allowed me to have my mother back in my life, my brother, my nieces, my girlfriend, a job, my 6 friends, you know, my truck, you know, it has. It's like, I was sitting out there for the longest, you know, and just, you know, like relapsing, you know, after relapse, after relapse, after relapse, and I never heard anything, you know, and it just took what it took in order for me to get sober, right? It just took what it took, man. It took all those bottoms, all those heartaches, you know, all those times of, you know, my son trying to do suicide and my mom on her hands and knees crying and begging and pleading, my stepdad grabbing my shirt saying, leave my house, you know, you're a bum. You know, just, it took all that, you know, it took all that, and it took that more than once, right? I'm not the guy that where my stepdad is going to grab my shirt and say, you're a bum, and then I'm going to stop drinking. No, I'm going to do it like 47 more times, right? You know what I'm saying? But it took all that, you know, it took what it took, you know, for me to see the light and for me to see that those guys have the answers and I don't. Thank you.